You are listening to the Sarah Fader podcast. I am Sarah Fader, I think, and this is what anxiety feels like. And I'm here with my homeboy, Norb Aiken. What up, homie?
What's up?
So Norb is known as 5-6er on the Twitter and Instagram and all places. And he is the author of 100, which is a collection of poems that actually document his journey from insanity to healing. That's how I would characterize it. He does talk about being in the psych ward. He does talk about heartbreak. He talks about a variety of issues. Welcome. Tell us about 100.
Thank you. It basically started off as a challenge from a few of my friends online at writing.com. And it was basically write 100 poems in 100 days. It's not something that I was into at first, but once I got rolling and got started with it, I kind of found a groove and kept going. And the encouragement kept pushing me, as well as just kind of delving into myself more and, you know, what I was going through as far as my mental state, my recovery, my healing, just learning more about what's going on the inner workings of my head.
So you mentioned writing.com. Tell us about how you got started there and what you've gained from that community.
I started on there years ago. I want to say 2001. And I was just looking for a place to post poems that I wrote online. And that was it. I just wanted a place that I could, without having like an actual website, I just wanted a place where I could archive things and store things and show them to the general public in a way that, you know, back in 2001, you couldn't do.
Yeah, because I think at that point, blogging was just at its inception and, you know, people are looking for that kind of community. And writing.com is a huge community of writers.
Yeah.
So what is that community like? What kind of support did you gain from being a member of writing.com?
The support in general, I would say, is very encouraging. You know, you're going to get people that don't like what you do, and that's fine. That happens no matter what you do, whether it's art or music or writing or playing football. It doesn't matter. You're going to get people who don't like or don't get what you do. But overall, they're very encouraging. Everyone's helpful. Everyone's in the same boat. You know, they write, and that's what they do, and that's what they like, and they want to talk to other writers about it. And when you can do that across different states or different countries, even, where you meet people all over the world, and you get their perspective on it, it really adds to what you're trying to do. As long as you're open to it, it really helps you out.
Have you ever wanted to stop writing?
Yeah. I've paused, I guess, rather than stop. Because I realized that when I'm like 100% into it, I don't want to stop. But I also know that there are times where you've got to back off and where it's not doing you any good, where it starts to feel like a grind.
Yeah.
So that's another aspect of the writing.com community, where you can just, you don't want to write, but you want to read something. You can read millions of items and review them, add your two cents to them, you know, encourage others as well. The give and take is great. As far as me wanting to stop, yes, it's very beneficial. You need that time off. You need to pull back and say, I'm not enjoying this. And once you can get back into enjoying it, you know, that you start back up and you almost feel like you pick up where you left off.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things as writers that we struggle with, is this idea that if you take a break from writing, there's something off, or like, you know, maybe you won't return to it. But like you said, breaks are healthy because you can kind of return to it with more energy or more kind of more, I don't want to say inspiration, but it's this feeling like it's not a chore. Like, you don't want something that you love to become routine and like something you dread doing, right?
Exactly. It's a chance to hit the reset button, really.
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of 100, what, if you were to think about a poem that evoked a lot of emotion in you, what would you say would be one of those pieces? Like, when, maybe something that when you wrote it, you had a very strong emotional reaction.
It's hard to say because there are a few, and I'm one of those people that I write enough that I don't always remember exactly what I write. I mean, there's the piece that I wrote about my brother that I spoke about at our launch party, Sinspiration.
Yes.
And that was, if I had the actual date, I could tell you when I wrote it. It's in the original notebook. But once, when that happened, that, and that's going to be when I lost my brother, that would be 2 years come just before Thanksgiving. So I know that I took a lot of time off because I just wasn't in the mental place to just write. Like, I didn't feel right doing anything. You know, the death of someone that you love really, really changes everything. Like, everything you think you do that's normal is no longer normal. You can't function the same way because there is something else lingering, and you don't know what it is other than you know it's grief.
So I'm going to read Sinspiration so that people that are listening know what we're referring to.
Okay.
So this is from Norb's poetry collection called 100, and you can get it online on Amazon and soon to be at Barnes & Noble. We're very excited.
Yes.
So this is called Sinspiration. Are you a blown wish? The witch who refuses to fly straight? I'm just sight without a gun, the crowd that can't run. I would like to know why. You're not talking, but you're healing. I'm not living, but I'm breathing. And I'm breaking from the beating. I can't replace you or what you're needing, and I can't make it stop. Wow, that's powerful. I mean, what I take away from that when I read it is this sense of a lack of control.
Yeah. I think that's a huge part of the initial sting of grief, is that you don't know what you're looking for, and you don't know what you need in order to feel like you want to feel like you could have helped that person. There's a part of you that pulls in that direction. And on the other side, you don't know how to fill loss. You don't know how to fill the hole that's in you. And you're grasping for straws at the initial onset of everything.
So how did your brother die?
Suicide.
Yeah, that's what it sounds that way in terms of that poem has a desperation attached to it. I feel like, was there a part of you that wanted to understand why?
Of course. It's not that I love my brother, and we were two very different people. So there were things that we definitely didn't see eye to eye on, but there were a lot of things that we also connected on because of the basic, you know, being my brother thing. But there were very, very few clues on my end, and even with his closer friends, the people that he really talked to on more of a day-to-day basis, you know, there were things that they were wondering about that they didn't know. And that made it harder for all of us. Because he was such an open, fun, caring guy that would do anything for anyone at any time. If you needed something, he would show up. You know, if your kids were donating something or selling something, like Girl Scout cookies or raffle tickets, this and that, like, he was like, sure, here you go. You know, he was one to help out in all of those ways. And that led to a lot of questions because there wasn't a lot left behind to give us any answer why.
Yeah. That's always difficult. I think that, you know, we focus a lot on what the cause of suicide was or why the person took their life, but then we sometimes forget about who was left behind.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the longer I tried to process everything, the more came out of me from that direction in terms of how I was dealing with it, in terms of how when I would go back home to my mother's house and see some of his friends, people that I knew only through him, and we would talk about things, it turned my wheels as far as how I was processing it, and it helped me understand it more. And then I could come home and write more about it and feel more comfortable about it, but also still have more questions about it than there were answers.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing about grief is that it's not linear. So it's confusing because you think like, oh, I'm at a good place or something, or not a good place, but some kind of like you've processed it and accepted it. And then you can go back to a stage of feeling really sad or feeling angry, you know?
Mm.
I wanted to shift, actually, I hate this expression, shift gears. There's a poem in here that I really like, and it's really short, but it gets the point across, and I really love it. It's called In Dreams, as a question. In Dreams?
Mm-hmm.
I need it to be cloudy sometimes to know that I'm not living in a dream. So what does that mean to you?
It's learning to accept that there are going to be bad days. As hard as you try, or as optimistic as you are, you know, there are people that tell you, oh, you know, wake up and put a smile on. Like, no, that's, no, you can't just do that. But you need to accept that you can wake up and not be in a dream, but it doesn't have to be a sunny day. It doesn't have to be what everyone thinks is a good day.
I hate those dudes, like, when you're walking down the street as a woman and you're just, like, you know, not feeling it, and you're, I don't know, just looking like a person who isn't...
You're minding your own business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they're like, just smile. Just smile, baby. And I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to smile.
Exactly. That's... I can't speak from that same perspective, obviously, but no, just don't do that.
No, exactly. And I mean, you can speak from the perspective of people that tell you when you're depressed to just, you know, look at the good stuff and just make a gratitude list.
Yeah. Just, oh, tomorrow will be a better day. Yeah, well, that's great, but I'm not worried about tomorrow right now. I'm worried about right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that's one of the misconceptions about depression is that, you know, people are just exaggerating or they're not looking at what's good. But what's the truth about depression?
The truth is that there are many truths, and it's many things. It's not wanting to wake up in the morning, period. I mean, that's what it is for me. You know, waking up is the hardest thing for me. And it's not just because I suffer from insomnia also, or anxiety, because really, insomnia and anxiety together are basically the ingredients for a tornado of hell while you're trying to sleep. Depression is just, you're done. You're done with it. You're done with all of it. You want it all to go away, and you don't even know if you want to start over. You're just done with it.
Yeah, that's scarily accurate. I think there's so many misconceptions about mental illness. Like, one of the things that I was really surprised, and I mean, I shouldn't have been surprised because this is stigmatizing, but when you came out to Portland, you said that you have borderline personality disorder. And I think one of the reasons I was surprised is that the stigma of borderline is people being like unstable or, you know, really dramatic or manipulative, but that's not really the case. I mean, what kind of associations or stereotypes have you heard about borderline?
Well, first off, as far as everything that you listed, I would say I was all of those things at one point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going through a period of change, going through a lot of treatment, I was able to kind of refocus my life, refocus my anger, my stress, limit my anger and stress. And that's been hugely beneficial. The stigmatisms, you know, it's just, you know, people telling you, you need to get your act together. You need to calm down. You need to do this. It's a lot of the whole you need situations or you must or you have to. People telling you how you should act and how you should channel all of your frustrations. I think a lot of people with BPD I don't think they're acting out because they're acting out on purpose. It's because their fuse is shorter. What sets them off takes a lot less. Where somebody tells you, oh, it's not a big deal, for whatever reason, yeah, it is a big deal. Even the smallest details, yes, can turn into a big thing. And when you've got somebody who doesn't really understand BPD against somebody who doesn't know that they might have BPD, and that's where the biggest clash has come from. And that does nobody any good. And like I said, I was all of that years ago. And it took a lot of classes and a lot of... I took three of the same BPD courses, one right after another, just so I knew what I had been and what I had been through with other people and how what I was doing wasn't healthy, but you can't control other people either. And I don't mean control as in like control freak, but you can't change what somebody else is thinking when you're in the heat of the moment. You can't just turn a joystick or you flip a switch and shut somebody off. When somebody else is already coming at you, going back at them is not healthy. So I think a lot of it is, people that don't know. And it goes both ways. People that don't know what BPD is versus, like I said, people that that are unaware that they have it, but they have that short temper. I hesitate to call it temper because that looks like it just means angry, but it's so many other things. Like it's more like a smaller cup that can hold only so much.
That's so funny because I was talking to Aaron about like bipolar disorder, which you know I have, and how it's kind of similar with the cup analogy, but we were talking about how he says that our filters get full more readily or easily than somebody that doesn't have the illness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of the same analogy with BPD. It's like your fuse is shorter because the pain tolerance is lower.
Right.
So that makes sense. And I think that there's a lack of compassion when it comes to understanding people with BPD, it seems.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And so if you were to say, like, how do you love somebody who has borderline?
Like you said, you have to start with compassion. You have to be a compassionate person. You have to have... I shouldn't say you have to have no expectations, but you have to meter those expectations. The more that you listen and understand a person with BPD, the more you can kind of ease into things, if that makes sense, where you can just it's a different kind of tact, I guess, rather than just, hey, why didn't you do this? You know, hey, can you please do this, or would you mind, or hey, I've got something for you that'll help us both out, you know. And those are just examples. How do you love someone? Yeah, you've got to be strong yourself. You know, I hate to use the opposites attract kind of mode of relationships, but when two people with BPD get together, It can go one way or the other. There's no in between. And when I say one way or the other, I mean one extreme to the other. They can figure each other out and know how to tiptoe, but know how to care. But if you've got two people that are just not aware of themselves, don't have situational awareness, it's fireworks 24/7, and that doesn't last very long. As for somebody without BPD, man, I can't tell you. You've just gotta be patient, be caring, be open, and just be honest. Those are the four things off the top of my head,
Yeah, I think that also is pretty good. It's good advice for loving anybody that has mental illness, right? Because I think there's this sort of idea that if you have mental illness, you're high maintenance or something. But I think that we're just more sensitive to things than other people.
To an extent, yes. And if somebody loves you, they're not going to consider you high maintenance. They're going to understand what you're going through. Even though they're not entirely 100% sure why, they love you and they're going to stick by you. They don't consider you high maintenance.
Yeah, that's funny that you said that. I was talking with Aaron the other day about how I was like, I don't know how you deal with me. And he's like, I would never use the words dealing with. Like, I wouldn't,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is what you're saying, because it's like, they're not going to look at you like that. If somebody loves you, they don't look at you that way.
Exactly.
So I'm looking at, I love this poem too, from 100. It's called Love Won't Keep Us Together. I'm staring at a phone, which has a picture. Oh, sorry, let me start over. So Love Won't Keep Us Together. I'm staring at a phone, which has on it a picture of you. Staring at a phone, and I know love won't keep us together. You could be someone else's best intentions. Maybe draw their moths to flames, or pave a way to their graves, all of them, or buy yourself a wedding band with their stolen credit card. I have no fucks left to give. The sack I kept them in overflows with emptiness, just like the airspace of your common sense. I traded all the sex in the world for loneliness, and I dodged bullets, flaming bouquets of STDs. I got lucky. Twice. Once when I met you, and once when I finally figured out how to undo that. Burn, by the way. I wanted it to, but I can't. Love won't keep us together. It lacks patience, and so do I. There is no persistence. There is nothing. All there is love, and it's not enough, and it never was. And it never will be. I love that so much. I love the line. Where is it? You could be someone else's best intentions. I love
that. There's a lot that went into that. Let me try to find it again. There it is. I actually wrote that, I want to say maybe like the day before Valentine's Day one year, the year that I was writing this. And it becomes early in the book, so it must have been 2015 or 2016. I was personally done with love. And, the funny thing that when I showed this to people is they initially went back to the Captain and Tennille song, Love Will Keep Us Together. And, that's the kind of joke. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. And that's kind of the opposite starting point of where I was going. The first verse is kind of true, you know. It was looking at a picture of somebody that I hadn't seen in a while, somebody that I dated, that I had no contact with anymore. Don't know why I still had that picture, but that's what it was. And sometimes you start rolling. And when I don't want to say I was bitter at the time, because I was over everything. Like, I was just done. I was completely over every relationship, every person. I was accepting of everything that I had been through and was done. And it kind of rolled along. Let me find that. Yeah. That was, you could be someone else's best intentions. You know, I think everybody starts with good intentions. And, or at least I think. And whether that's true or not, I can't speak to other people. But, you know, you'd like to believe that people have good intentions. I've always started a relationship with good intentions. And as time goes on, you figure out that, you know, this isn't right for you. And you have to determine how long you want to keep going. Or the other person determines that for you, and you have to figure out what you're going to do, as well as the emotional aspect.
Right. That is so true. And it's not only love. I mean, relationships are extremely complicated.
Yeah.
As we know. We are out of time. I can't believe it went so fast. And just so that everybody knows, it took us like 2 hours to try to figure out technology. And it was so worth it, because I love you, Norm.
Oh, I love you too. We should have IT degrees now.
We should. I think we have honorary IT degrees. So, you know what? If you listen to this podcast, head on to Twitter and hashtag Norb as fuck, Norb AF, to let us know that you've been listening. And go pick up a copy of 100 on Amazon.com by Norb Aiken, which I finally learned to spell correctly, which is A-I-K-I-N.
Yes. And if you go to my website, you can get signed copies as
yes,
well.
Yes, go to Norb's website, NorbAiken.com. And you can get signed copies, and Norb will write you a beautiful message.
Yep.
And Norb, what are some parting words for the people? What do you want to leave people with?
I hope you enjoy it. I hope you, if you get a chance to get the book, I hope you enjoy it. I would appreciate it very much. And, you know, just look out for everyone. Look out for one another. You know, you don't know what people are going through on a day-to-day basis. Even if you see them every day, you don't know. You know, so just be kind, be good, be gentle.
I love that so much. Thank you, Norb.
Thank you very much.